Public Affairs to order on this beautiful day of February 12th, 2007. Good morning, everyone. We have a quorum and we have some committee bills that I would like you to that we need to get into the system. So without any further ado, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. I move LC drafts 1929 and 1930 to be introduced as committee bills.
Senator Gordley has moved LC drafts 1929 and 1930, introducing them as a committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. Do we have people to testify for HCR2 at this point in time? No? Could you call those people? Yeah. All right. I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 439. Athena? Good morning, Chair Monis Anderson, committee members. My name is Athena Zeke. I'm with the Oregon Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, and I'm here to talk about Senate Bill 439. You've got a piece of paper in front of you. At the top, you've got some definitions, and this will help you understand what Senate Bill 439 is asking to change.
Before you go on, Ms. Zeke, Shannon, would you describe the bill?
I keep wanting her to nudge me to remind me that she is supposed to introduce the bill. So 1 minute.
Senate Bill 439 prohibits animals from participating in a race if the animal was administered certain drugs within 24 hours prior to the race.
Okay.
Okay. Just to clarify that, right now the statute reads that after entry in a race, a horse cannot be administered certain drugs. And as you'll see on this paper in the background section, the therapeutic drugs and medications are heavily regulated by the Racing Commission. So we're not really changing what they can have, it's just when. And when the statute was originally written, the entry was 1 day prior in general, so that was a real standard time. But now, depending upon whose meet it is, there's county fair race meets, there's commercial race meet at Portland Meadows, etc. The entries can be as far as 5 days out, and that does not give you a standard time. And that's unfair to the horses, the people running the horses, and the people betting on the horses. So we think it's a real simple change to bring it up to date with the rest of the nation, and especially Washington and California, whom we like to get their horses in to race. It brings, you know, people into the state.
Can you explain a little bit of what these do? Are these drug enhancement?
No.
Do they enhance their ability to perform? Is that what these drugs do?
No, Chair Monis Anderson. They are, it'd be like an athlete taking ibuprofen, most of them. Some horses are known to bleed through the lungs when they are exercising. Exercise-induced pulmonary bleeding, I believe is what they call it. And they give a drug called Lasix that prevents that, and that's controlled. That is actually given within the 24-hour period. It's about 4 hours before the race, but that would be one drug. The other drug that's called...
And that would be prohibited?
That is actually acceptable, but the Racing Commission regulates that, and the state vets watch when that is given, and the horses have to be on a special list, and there's a lot of paperwork to go through to get to that point. Another drug is phenylbutazone, and that is like ibuprofen for the horse. And just when you're exercising that often and running a hard race, some horses develop a little inflammation, and the phenylbutazone will prevent injury in the future. If a human athlete is working hard and they get a little sore in a joint, they take some ibuprofen to prevent future injury, such as arthritis, developing because of that.
And that drug would be prohibited?
Within the 24-hour period, yes.
Okay. All right.
I could certainly get you information on the administrative rules that the Racing Commission holds for all the drugs and drug testing, if that's appropriate.
Is there any further discussion?
No, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Carter.
I'm sorry. It just appeared to me that the Racing Commission is on top of the issues that could really go awry, and I want to applaud them for doing that, because I would imagine a horse is at risk when somebody just give the horse some dose of medicine 1 hour before racing, because that's a hard thing. I've been to horse races, and so they run hard and long. So I'm just want to applaud them for being able to take action before someone else does.
Do you know of anyone who's opposed to this?
Chair Mona Sanderson, I do not. And okay. I believe that the Racing Commission, although they cannot technically testify on this, they are for it because it, again, would bring us into conformity with the surrounding states.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I do have one question. I did not catch your name. If you could say your name again and also spell it. Thank you.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Gordley, my name is Athena Zeek, A-T-H-E-N-A-Z-E-E-K.
Thank you. And then to your comment about the Racing Commission, you're saying that you believe they would be in favor of the bill?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Gorley, yes, I've spoken with the chair of the Racing Commission several times, and this actually came up in the recent amendments to the medication rules that we went through last fall, and they had wanted to change this, but it was in statute, so we needed to come here first.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I just confused when you said that the Racing Commission is in favor, but technically they can't testify. I didn't understand that.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, I may have misspoken. We've got another bill that is a fiscal impact that they cannot testify on, so that's the one I was thinking of. They are in favor. I don't know why they aren't testifying.
Well, Madam Chair, thanks for clearing that up, because I couldn't figure
Sorry.
Out. I can understand a budget bill where they technically can't testify, but I appreciate you clearing that up. And I guess, Madam Chair, I would assume that if they have issues, they would be here.
Yes,
I think so.
I would never assume anything. I've learned that about this building. And frankly, if we have some more information that can get them on record about this bill, I think that would be the best way to go forward, Madam Chair. Getting the Racing Commission on record seems to be.
Madam Chair, I have no comment other than the fact that this seems to be a health care issue for the animals, and I think it would be nice if the Racing Commission was here. But if they were going to raise opposition, I've been in this building long enough to know they would have been here in droves. So obviously it doesn't mean that much to them for them to be absent. But when we are talking about caretaking of animals, I just think that it behooves us to move forward and try to get this into statute so that we can make sure that our animals are protected as they perform in racing situations.
Chairman. Yes.
And for the record, I did leave a message with, I don't have the name in front of me, but with somebody from the Racing Commission, and I have not yet heard back from them.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Zeek.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, are we going into work session on this bill?
I would like to know. Yes. Mm-hmm. I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 439. I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 439. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 439 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 439 has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any questions, discussions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Burley.
Not to belabor it. I just my comments were not about holding up the bill. I was just trying to make sure that we lay down as complete a record as possible about the intent of the bill, and a record that also is clear about who the interested parties are. Yeah. Thank you.
And Senator, I didn't mean to make it sound as if that was your intent whatsoever. So if that was if it appeared that way, I totally apologize. Thanks.
All right. No further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Excused.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Morley.
Aye.
Senator Chair Monis Anderson.
Aye. Senate Bill 439, having received enough votes to get to the floor, is called pass. Close the work session on Senate Bill 439, and it looks like there is no one to testify on HCR 2. The carrier of the bill of 439 will be Senator Carter.
Thank you. Cruz, you did that.
I did that. Yes, I did.
How long did I volunteer?
What kind of?
All right. I am not going to address HCR 2 today. We will take that off the agenda and bring it back another time when we have people here to testify on it. Okay, and I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 135. Can you read the bill?
Senate Bill 135 requires occupational therapists and occupational therapist assistants to comply with continuing education requirements and revises certain provisions relating to the definition and the scope of practice for occupational therapy.
I apologize for having me. I have to go testify on a bill, but I will be back. And so, Chair, Vice Chair Gordley.
Good morning. If you will identify yourselves for the record, and whoever would like to start, please.
Good morning. My name is Felicia Holgate, and I'm the director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. And with me today is Genevieve Duren. She is a working occupational therapist in Portland, and she is chair of our board, serving her second term. And she's been chair for three years, I believe.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I would like to point out that with us is also Sybil Fisher, who will be coming up, who is the president of the Oregon Occupational Therapy Association. And Tiffany Bogus is a professor at Pacific University.
Very good.
And a huge audience, and these are students from the School of Occupational Therapy from Pacific University learning about the legislative process and how important legislation is to their life.
Wonderful. Welcome to all of the students from Pacific University. It's always a pleasure to see students in the building and observing the process. And what I would say to all of you is look at the seats up here and think about your future in public service, the possibility of a future in public service, and pick out your future seat.
Thank you, Senator Gordley, and Acting Chair. The first part of Senate Bill 135 deals with two very important aspects for the board. The first is to add the requirement of continuing education for new applicants coming into Oregon. We now have by rule that all applicants have to have 30 points of continuing education, but by statute, the only requirements are that they graduate, have their degree, that they have their field work, and pass the exam. And it's actually our Assistant Attorney General that recommended we put that into statute. So it's what we're doing currently, but not required by statute. The other change is the board was very concerned about a lot of applicants coming in that actually had been out of practice for as long as 10 years and came up with a reentry program through Pacific University, which gave a uniform program for these applicants coming in. It also is to the advantage because these applicants get the field work from the school, because now what we've had to do is have some kind of a program, but the board didn't really know how effective it was. And this program now offers a fieldwork experience, and they also get the insurance as a graduate degree and as students. So those are two aspects of the bill where I believe everybody is for, and I don't think there's any controversy. I believe the only concern, and the big concern, is on the definition of occupational therapy. The board started working on coming up with a new definition over 3 years ago, and we actually looked at writing our own definition, but decided the most important thing to do would be to adopt the national AOTA, that's the American Occupational Therapy Association. And we've published it and had it on our website a number of years, as well as some other boards. This bill was then submitted. It's a governor's bill. And when that bill was submitted to LC, as I'm sure you're aware, the definition we got back is quite different. And you'll hear testimony, and I know the committee members are very aware of the scope of practice issues, and you deal with them quite a lot. And you'll hear concern that this bill, the language in it on the definition, is too broad, and that some of the scope of practice should not go into rule. Our board actually agrees with those concerns, and we have some of those same concerns. We feel that if, though, we get a very short definition, we do need to put some of that language into our rule, and that's what Section 515, I believe, deals with. I want to point out that neither the speech language pathology board nor the physical therapy boards are opposed to this language change, and you will hear testimony today from, I assume, some other professions, but it's not from their licensing boards. And they have the same concern that we have, that the occupational therapists understand what their practice act, and they have the experience and the education. And we don't really believe that what we're asking for is much different than what those professions have in their statutes, which are also somewhat vague. This is an exciting year for the board. It's our 30th anniversary of the Occupational Therapy Practice Act. And the definition in Oregon has not changed since 1977. I also want to point out the occupational therapists, as of this year, need to have a master's degree. So it's a 3-year degree for therapists, although assistants is different. We're talking about occupational therapists. And it's important to have a definition that aligns with the American OT Association framework and what is taught and the terminology being used in actual practice. I won't go into detail, but I have some testimony about what the National American OT Association talks about and how it's important to try to have a uniform rule. And many states are looking at and adopting this national definition. In any event, whichever definition we adopt, we don't intend to expand the practice of occupational therapists from what we have now. There is a certain amount of overlap in all these professions, as you know. An example would be what are called physical agent modalities, or modalities. And that might be things for laymen, such as heat packs or ultrasound or electrical stimulation. Many professions use these types of modalities, but for different goals. So occupational therapists use them to facilitate the participation in occupation. Physical therapists to facilitate movement and mobility, and speech-language pathologists to address the eating, feeding, swallowing interventions. The board looks at modalities in all the time and talks about that it's the opinion of the board that modalities can be used as long as they teach the client new self-help skills, and they're part of this long-term plan or the plan developed by the OT to reach for the patient to reach an increased level of independence. And these modalities are used as an adjunct to or for purposeful activity to enhance the occupational therapy performance. I'd like to just give you a few brief examples of what occupational therapists do, because I'm not sure if that many people really understand it. Many therapists in Oregon, I think about a quarter, work with kids in schools, so they would be helping them learn how to hold a pencil so they can write, or learn better ways to eat or dress, or specifically to deal with attention issues and how to interact with others appropriately. Others work with those disabled or growing old or injured that have to learn what are called activities of daily living, ADLs. I think you're probably aware of that. So these are occupational therapists work with people to help them learn with that injury or disability how to dress or eat or cook or get in and out of the bathtub with grab bars, for example, or while in a wheelchair or a walker. We have one occupational therapist in Oregon that's certified as a hand therapist, and there are a lot of hand therapists, about another third of the profession. And she works, it's very interesting, she works supporting other therapists in the country, helping soldiers who are returning from war that have had an amputation. Some, like Genevieve Duran, our board chair here, work with injured or those in a rehab setting of a hospital. Genevieve Duran, for example, also works with helping elderly to make an assessment about whether they can drive or not. And I'm sure she'll be glad to give you more information about that kind of thing. With Oregon having a more larger elderly population, as you're aware of, occupational therapists are an important part of the need in Oregon. And, in fact, the Oregon workforce assessment need shows occupational therapists as one of those that has that need, although our numbers are growing and we are continuing to increase the amount of occupational therapists in the state. So I just would like to point out again that occupational therapists in many of those areas work in a wide variety of settings, in a wide variety of techniques and skills. Professions sometimes think that they own interventions, but they don't really. Modalities are used by many professions, as I pointed out, in a different way. And those activities of daily living aren't owned by occupational therapists. That's just the term that we use. In conclusion, I don't believe that we are asking for any specific implication in terms of the actual practice in Oregon. It's a change in definition that's long overdue since the first definition in 1977. Our concern is that, again, with the language, our preference would be to have the American occupational therapy definition. And in the back, I gave you what the new definition is in Senate Bill 135, our current definition, and the first paragraph, and then the second page shows the whole long definition. It's a concern for us because we don't know quite which language to address, because our preference is to have the longer national definition. And we'd be very happy to work with the committee and with others that are concerned with specific language. We'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Carter.
Thank you. Do you now have an organization that is a dues-paying organization?
Senator Gordley and Senator Carter, there is an association, and Sybil Fisher is the president of the association. She'll be here to testify.
Okay. Yeah. And what is your role?
I'm the director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board.
Okay. So as a person who licenses occupational therapists in the state, what are the dues at this moment?
At this moment, for occupational therapy assistance, it's $70 a year or $140. We do two-year licensing and $200 for occupational therapists. And actually, with our budget, we're going to be proposing a, or sometime this year, it's by rule, we're going to be actually reducing our fees.
Reducing your fees.
We hope so, yes.
Okay. So as you collect these fees, do they get services that most of the all of the members pay into this? As and those that are not members now, they would have to become a member of the association if they're licensed.
Acting Chair Gordley, Senator Carter, when they pay their license fees, they get their license that allows them to practice occupational therapy in the state. And, of course, we do discipline. We have our website. We provide a lot of information. We check on continuing education. That's as a state licensing board. Separate from that is the state association, as all professions have, and they pay a separate license fee. And although we work with that association, we provide continuing education and groups and various other aspects of the profession with that professional association, which is separate from the licensing board. Does that answer it?
Yeah, but I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Madam Vice
Follow
Chair.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm. Do our assistants a member of the association, or are they licensed?
Mm-hmm. Occupational therapist assistants are licensed, and we have just over 230 of those, and of a total of about 1,450 licensees at the present time. And yes, they are licensed.
Madam Vice Chair, I apologize for the financial questions, because I know this is not ways and means, but I'm just trying to get a fix on what happens as they not only redefine themselves, but as they have some opportunity now to further sanction people if things go awry. And in all professions, things do go awry, whether we anticipate it or not, it does. So what I was just trying to think in terms of what services you provide, are there services for those people who might not follow the rules as well as they should? Or is there mental health coverage for some of your members that they're still protected once all of this is done? Because if you're going to be charging those kind of fees, it would appear to me that certain services should be provided that helps keep the membership in case something goes awry, that they can have services within their own organization. And that's kind of what the direction in which I'm going on is.
Do you want to answer?
Yes.
And if you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes. I am Genevieve Duran. I am the chair of the licensing board. And Senator Gourley and committee. The National Association, the AOTA, you have to be certified first. You have to take your licensing national registration before you can practice occupational therapy anywhere in the United States. And then, and you do pay fees to maintain that certification. Okay. When you come to Oregon, when you pay your fees, you are paying your fees to practice here, but we also go through disciplinary action when we have a complaint or something that comes in. Our licensing board will really look at what does that therapist need in terms of being able to continue to practice, or are they not able to practice anymore. So we may sanction that very differently. It may be to get counseling. It may be for some way that we can track that particular therapist so they're not a harm for any of our patients. So we actually do look at supporting our licensees. Our AOTA, our OTAO, Oregon OT Association, the membership organization for OTs, they do have continuing education, and they provide a lot of membership services for our for the occupational therapists in the state.
One final question. Mm-hmm. So your occupational therapist assistants, they have an organization, or they are a member of your organization?
They're a member of the same organizations.
What would you say the entry level
income is for an occupational therapist and then for an occupational therapist assistant? Just generalize.
I think for an occupational therapy assistant, it might be about $35,000 a year, I'm guessing.
Right.
For an occupational therapist, about $50,000.
So your dues are consistent with the kind of mm-hmm. salaries that people make.
Yes.
Well, I tell you one thing, as many boards as I hear about, to hear one community of people come in and say we're going to have a decrease in their dues, that certainly is a contribution mm-hmm. to your looking out for your membership. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. And if I could add one more thing about assistance,
certainly.
Alicia Holgate from mm-hmm. the board, Senator Gordon, Senator Carter. Occupational therapy assistants can only work under the supervision of a licensed occupational therapist.
Okay.
So there's also a lot of additional requirements for the assistant working.
Okay.
Thank Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a general question. With the deletion of sub 3 in section 1 and the addition of the new 2 and 4 in section 1, either the language in the bill or your suggested rewrite of the definition, mm-hmm. it appears to me that this is a significant expansion of scope, seeing how current law basically, you know, is talking about people who have had injuries or illness, and the new language would include those who are at risk of developing. And I mean, as a farmer, I am constantly every day at risk of an injury. So could you kind of explain that to me?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm necessarily, and quite honestly, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. my mother, after her illness a couple years ago, physical therapy has been a key component of her recovery, and I'm supportive. But when we are dealing with expansion of scope, I think it's good to be informed of exactly what we're doing.
Senator Gourley and Senator Cruz, I think one of the ways to look at that is when we were first licensed, we were in 1977, we dealt with many chronic illnesses. And at this point in time, we're looking at that aspect of wellness and prevention, that we can really look at how can people make lifestyle changes that will not move them way over to that end of the continuum that puts them in a chronic illness. So if we can get a patient who is kind of going down the road of at some point they may be more impaired, like a person that has arthritis, they may be more impaired if they don't do some of the preventative kinds of things in their 20s versus when they're in their 50s and they come to us and they're very, very disabled. So sometimes we can really help them have a more functional quality of life if we do deal with them before they're at a chronic place. And that's what we're talking about. Not so much changing our scope is changing, being able to, when we intervene, change when we intervene in that process so that they are not as disabled as when we would see them at 60 versus when we may be working with them at 30.
Follow up. Is this change of definition kind of codifying what is currently happening?
Yes.
So the referrals are happening now, and this is just codifying
yes.
current practice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes.
And welcome to Senator Courtney. Senator Carter, did you have another question? You did not. All right. Ms. Holgate, did you have additional testimony?
No, unless there's questions, I'll be here.
All right. Did you have additional testimony? All right. Then we will continue down the list. Sybil Fisher. And I will also call Tiffany, is it Bogus? Bogus. I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
Good morning.
And again, if you'll state your name clearly for the record and also spell your name, that would be very helpful.
Sure.
Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Gourley and committee members. My name is Sybil Fisher. Sybil spelled S-Y-B-I-L, Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R. I am the president of the Occupational Therapy Association of Oregon. new to this position by about 5 months. So I'm kind of new to all of this, except I'm not new to OT. After listening to Felicia and Genevieve, I think they've done an excellent job of bringing you up to date and a little more informed on the specific changes to our practice definition. I think the bit that I can add to this, maybe to help your understanding from where we as OTs might be coming from, is I went back last night to think about what do I really want to tell you guys. And I looked up some things, and I rediscovered some issues about occupational therapy that I initially fell in love with. And occupation means meaningful activity. So I thought, how can I make this meaningful to you? And I don't know how to do that, but I know that it's meaningful to a lot of practicing therapists. I don't really see the changes that we're proposing, that the licensing board is proposing, as redefining anything that we've been doing. I've been an OT for 11 years, and everything in that definition I'm familiar with. We aren't trying to introduce anything or pull any kind of tricks. It's just kind of an upgrade of what we do currently in our practice, and let the language reflect that. I'm a lead therapist over physical therapists, occupational therapists, and speech therapists where I work, and I have a clear understanding of the role delineations that each profession has. And again, I just truly believe that this upgrade to our definition doesn't overstep our current practice boundaries. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions or comments? Please continue.
Madam Vice Chair, Senator Gordley, and members of the committee, my name is Tiffany Bogus, TiffanyBoggis. I represent the School of Occupational Therapy at Pacific University. It's the only school of occupational therapy in the state of Oregon. There we have the director and five faculty members, including myself. We are all licensed occupational therapists in the state of Oregon. We are all active members of our National American Occupational Therapy Association, as well as our state Occupational Therapy Association. So thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of SB 135. I think I can help by sharing a little bit of background or history of our profession to help show the evolution of OT education and practice that will help show how this definition in no way changes the scope of practice of occupational therapy, but rather it serves to align more closely with our profession's founding and current philosophy of health. So when our profession was founded in the early 20th century, we evolved from the field of social science, and the primary role of occupational therapy served to facilitate the ability of individuals who had difficulty functioning within the community to participate more fully in society. It was at a time when state of health of individuals was considered to be a product of the environment and of social issues, and it coincided with beliefs of humanitarian movement at the time. So it was during the we helped individuals participate in society by modifying the environments in which they engage and helped them to engage everyday normal activities of daily living, which we call occupations, which can include self-care, leisure, work occupations. And that was the focus of OT education at the time. So it wasn't until the war years when our occupational therapy was called upon to assist with the physical and mental challenges of veterans returning home from the war. And our focus then, or an added focus, became our role in rehabilitation, which was further and expanded over the years with the advent of the Rehabilitation Act of 1954 and the establishment of Medicare in 1965. So educational programs at that time, while maintaining the core value that the ability to gauge an occupation is a critical component of health, placed an additional emphasis on the basic and applied sciences and specific evaluation and treatment methodologies to affect changes in impairments of individuals. So it was under these sociocultural and political conditions at the time that the 1977 definition was written in the Oregon OT Practice Act. But since that time, over the 80s and 90s, the emerging paradigm in health care advances the traditional medical approach of cure and care to a focus on enablement and participation, which speaks to our founding philosophy. And studies show over the past few decades there's much evidence that shows that determinants such as socioeconomic status, education, environmental factors, and health behavior play a more prominent role in health outcomes than medical care alone. So one example, a current example actually of occupational therapy practice in the social arena, as Madam Vice Chair Senator Gordley may remember, was last year when myself and some students accompanied a group of Latino women who are socioeconomically challenged. We accompanied them here to the state capitol so that they could participate in the process and empowered them to be able to share their stories and advocate for themselves in this activity of daily living. Also, this definition being proposed, let me just tell you a little bit about where that came from. Actually, in 2001, the World Health Organization, they were the ones that changed their language in the International Classification of Functioning of Disability and Health, and where their language had been a focus on impairment and disability and handicap, now it's one more of function and enablement and participation. And the American Occupational Therapy Association worked closely with the World Health Organization with this language. And after that, that's when our American Occupational Therapy Association created our Occupational Therapy Practice Framework, which is a national document, and it is the most respected document that guides our current education and practice of occupational therapy as a profession. Shortly after that was when the American Occupational Therapy Association definition came out that again mirrored and reflected that language at the time. So that brings us to where we are now. Basically, in education, it is these documents that we use at Pacific University to educate our students about occupational therapy practice, the documents that have language about the social participation as well as our role in rehabilitation. So therefore, this faculty of the School of Occupational Therapy support the updated definition of occupational therapy in our Occupational Therapy License Board Practice Act to more closely reflect what it is that we already do, and endorses our philosophy and in no way changes the scope of practice of occupational therapy. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions or comments for the witnesses? Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amanda Moore and Julie Allison. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Vice Chair Senator Gordley and other committee members. My name is Amanda Moore. I live in Forest Grove, and I'm a student of occupational therapy at Pacific University. I'm currently completing my master's. I expect to graduate in May. So I will be, thank you very much, I will be among the first wave of occupational therapists required by our national organization, the American Occupational Therapy Association, to possess a master's degree at entry-level practice. As such, my classmates and I have had the benefit of using the updated and revised materials from our national organization. As others have mentioned, these include the Occupational Therapy Practice Framework. It describes our domain and process, and it was updated as of 2002, as well as our scope of practice, which was published in 2004. These documents reflect current practice that the proposed definition in Senate Bill 135 articulates, and therefore I am speaking in support of that bill. Passage of Senate Bill 135 would update our profession's legal definition to reflect current practice. It's a definition that has not been updated in 30 years since the OT Licensing Board's inception. The amendment to Senate Bill 135, and when I refer to the amendment, I'm referring to the full scope, the Model Practice Act that was submitted that describes in full detail the language from our national organization. That provides additional clarification and detail sufficient to elucidate occupational therapy's scope of practice. This amendment strengthens the proposed definition in SB 135, and its specificity also addresses concerns of other professionals who may be concerned about overlap in services. So in closing, I'd respectfully like to ask that the committee support Senate Bill 135 as amended. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Moore. And where do you hope to, where would you like to apply your skills and experience upon graduation?
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chair Gordley, and other members of the committee. I personally am excited about the possibility of working in preventative care, and not only to assist and work with people who may experience disability, but also work with people, individuals, and communities to try and prevent disability. So,
excellent. Meaning that we will keep you in Oregon?
I sure hope so.
All right. We hope so, too. Please.
Senator Gordley and committee, my name is Julie Allison. That's J-U-L-I-E-A-L-L-I-S-O-N. I'm also a third-year occupational therapy student at Pacific, and I'm here today to support Senate Bill 135. This bill proposes a change in definition for occupational therapy that is consistent with that of our professional organization, the American Occupational Therapy Association. This association sets the standard for practice for occupational therapy across the nation, as well as for education of occupational therapy across the nation. And in 2002, they released the Occupational Therapy Practice Framework, which has already been mentioned, with the intent to update and clarify how occupational therapy evaluation and intervention connects to our philosophy of promoting health and well-being through occupation. This framework has been an important part and a common thread throughout my occupational therapy education, almost to the point of redundancy sometimes. I believe that this bill really reflects the intent and the vocabulary of that document, and that's why I asked you to support this bill. I believe that the Practice Act that defines occupational therapy for the state of Oregon should be updated to reflect our current practice, our current professional documents, and to be consistent with our professional organization. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you both. Questions or comments? We thank you both for your excellent testimony and also for your willingness to be here this morning. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
They couldn't go wrong because the master teacher is sitting over here with his arms folded. And
his how long it would take.
His years of work is coming forth.
Yes. That would be the good Professor Dondero.
Yes.
Two additional folks to testify? John Tracy and Tracy, is it Rutten?
I know. You're sandwiched.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Vice Chair Gordley, members of the committee. I'm Dr. John Tracy. I'm a speech-language pathologist. I'm here to testify about Senate Bill 135 for the Executive Board of the Oregon Speech-Language Hearing Association. I reside at 525 Orchard Drive West, Monmouth, Oregon, 97361. This testimony is offered for the Executive Board of the Oregon Speech-Language Hearing Association, representing over 600 speech-language pathologists and audiologists employed in the public schools, hospitals, private clinics, community clinics, and in private practices throughout the state of Oregon. The purpose of this testimony is to protest the definition of occupational therapy as it presently appears in Senate Bill 135. Originally, swallowing was in the scope of practice that was part of the draft of Senate Bill 135. That was published by the OT Board and was looked at by the Executive Board of the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association and other members of the association this summer. After input to the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board regarding this inclusion of swallowing as part of the scope of practice of an occupational therapist and all the reasons why it should be removed, it continued to remain in the scope of practice. Then when the Senate bill appeared, it was completely gone, the new definition, and I realized that that was part of Legislative Council's design to shorten up the definition in the bill. However, obviously, given what was in the original draft, swallowing is subsumed under the definition of activities of daily living and then further under feeding.
Can I ask, Madam Chair, what section, Doctor, are you referring to?
It's point two of the new definition. And there's a statement in there about activities of daily living. In the original draft, which is their scope of practice, subsumed under there is feeding and swallowing as a role or act of practice of the occupational therapist. Last week I was advised that the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board wants to add back to Senate Bill 135 some or all of the scope of practice of the occupational therapist from the original draft. And that was discussed here today by the board chair and the executive director. The Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association applauds their willingness to bring this forward for consideration and discussion before the Oregon legislature and the citizens of Oregon. However, the new language apparently still would include swallowing as a part of feeding as an activity of daily living. The Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association would continue to object to the addition of swallowing to the practice of occupational therapy as regulated by the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. It is apparently not included in the training of occupational therapists in Oregon, and thus this legislation offers inadequate protection of Oregonians with swallowing disorders. Whereas Oregon Revised Statute 681 governing speech-language pathology practice, it specifically identifies this as a separate area of practice within the scope of the speech-language pathologist. The following support these objections. Point number one, training. A review of all the graduate course descriptions on the Pacific University School of Occupational Therapy website revealed no specific class dedicated to swallowing, or that this is a topic in any of the courses or the fieldwork in their curriculum. The term swallowing is never used in any of the course descriptions. Whereas the training programs in speech-language pathology at the University of Oregon and Portland State University have a course entitled Dysphagia or Swallowing Disorders in the graduate curriculum, along with an externship in a medical facility, both of which are required for the master's degree. The speech-language pathologist has focused training on the anatomy and physiology of the body, including the normal and abnormal aspects of swallowing. Differences in definition, point two. Feeding is the act of purveying food or drink to the mouth. This assumes arm and hand coordination. It has long been assumed in practice that the occupational therapist concentrates on feeding due to their training in the anatomy and physiology of hand and arm strength and coordination, whereas swallowing is all the processes involved once the food or drink enters the mouth and leaves the lower throat and moves into the stomach via the esophagus. Since the early 1970s, this aspect of swallowing has been a focus of the speech-language pathologist. Point three, national standards and research. In 2005, the Certificate of Clinical Competence in Speech-Language Pathology, awarded by the American Speech-Language Hearing Association, which is a basic credential for the practicing speech-language pathologist, required competence in swallowing disorders. Many of the major researchers in the area of swallowing disorders are speech-language pathologists conducting their research through speech-language pathology training programs. The American Speech-Language American Speech and Hearing Association also has published specific guidelines for the training and practice of speech-language pathologists since the 1990s. The only national trial on the efficacy of treatment strategies for swallowing dysfunction was conducted by two professors of speech-language pathology who are national and international scholars in this specific sub-area of the practice of speech-language pathology. Swallowing is a specific area of practice under the definition of speech-language pathology in ORS 681205.
Can I ask another question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Doctor, since I was reading this bill and I was trying to see where swallowing is a part of their bill.
And swallowing is not in the definition in the present bill. However, it was in the draft of the bill. And when you read the draft, it's subsumed or it's within activities of daily living. And it was originally feeding and activities of daily living, feeding and swallowing. So by having a more general definition in the present bill under activities of daily living, the assumption of the Board of the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association is that swallowing is still within the scope of practice in this bill for the occupational therapist.
Just a minute. Do we have, Madam Chair, do we have any amendments to this bill that include that?
Not at this point.
We don't have any amendments that would take into consideration swallowing. And unless that is something done by rule, and if it's done by rule, then you could take that up with the board. But I don't see anything in this present bill that would say that. Madam Chair, can we just... I think it's appropriate dialogue, but it's not appropriate dialogue if indeed swallowing is not a part of the bill. Does that...
And it would be important for me to see that you and the OC would get together in looking at an amendment.
May be pleased to do that, Madam Chair.
But if it's not in the bill, and they don't, well, so you need them back up here.
We do.
Yeah. Who was it? I'm sorry. You can stay.
Nope.
Yeah, and have.
Good morning, Felicia Holgate from the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. I think what the reference is to the AOTA model definition, which I put in the back of my testimony, and as I explained earlier, we still have a concern about the short definition that came out of Legislative Council because it is very broad, and the discussion of the specific wording is in the model definition at the very end when it talks about management of feeding, eating, and swallowing. And I do understand the concern. I have talked to John before about this, We're not sure how the committee wants to proceed, because actually, as the licensing board, we would prefer to have more language in the definition, but I'm not quite sure whether that's going to happen, and it's up to the committee to agree to ask for amendments from LC. So we haven't, we're not able to request
At this point in time, yes, the bill could not pass in its present form. And so we would need to have, what I would want is for the physical therapist and the occupational therapist to get together, to come up with an amendment, and then take it to our committee chair, and we'd get them down to LC. But what's difficult, yes, Senator Cruz.
John, the model definition of AOTA, is that acceptable? Does that cover you appropriately? Because it appears to me that
fine,
it would.
Fine, as long as the term swallowing is removed. Because I've worked in four hospitals in the state, and occupational therapists primarily don't do swallowing evaluation or therapy. They don't conduct video fluoroscopies. This is in my experience in four different hospitals. Currently work in a hospital, large hospital in the state, and that's the same. Same in the rehab center, same in the acute hospital. They don't do swallowing. So if that were removed, it becomes then a moot point. We're happy. We'll go home. Everything's good.
May I ask something?
Yes, sir.
Senator Gordley? Ms. Holgate, currently, are we training occupational therapists to... so that their skills would be in alignment with the AOTA model practice, model practices?
Senator Gordley, I believe we do, or Chairman Monis Anderson and Senator Gordley. But I think if our Pacific University professor could testify to the specifics, I believe there is a very big change in what occupational therapists do in that area. I'm not the one to answer the specifics on it, but
if
yes.
We could bring the professor forward, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just to help us.
I make one more comment.
Mm-hmm. Clarify.
Mm-hmm. Look at the American Occupational Therapy Association webpage. They talk about specialty certifications. They do have one in feeding and swallowing. They clearly state that this certification is not required to practice as an occupational therapist.
And excuse me, Felicia Holgate again. That specialty is a very specialized certification, you know, in one area of what OTs do. So it's not every occupational therapist that works in that area, certainly.
Okay, and Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But the model definition doesn't exclude that. I think it's pretty inclusive. I'd just like to make sure everybody is on board with it not having the specificity that's not needed, but the generalities that are. And I would suggest, if everybody agrees to that and it's standard, the standard definition, that maybe that's the amendment we need.
Professor. Senator Carter.
I want to ask Ms. Holgate a question. Is it the association's intent to keep swallowing in your definition?
It is the National Occupational Therapy Association to keep
so it. Then we do need this debate. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Professor?
Madam Chair, Senator Monis Anderson and Committee, dysphagia or swallowing training is indeed included in occupational therapy education at Pacific University. We also have documents from the American Occupational Therapy Association that advises at what level of feeding and swallowing an entry-level therapist would be involved in versus an intermediate-level therapist versus an advanced-level therapist. In order to be involved at an advanced-level therapist level, additional training would be required. However, working with feeding and swallowing disorders is definitely a part of occupational therapy and occupational therapy education. And in fact, myself, in collaboration with a speech pathologist, started the first interdisciplinary dysphagia program at Oregon Health Sciences University back in 1982, and went on to form a partnership to do training throughout the 80s of occupational therapists and speech pathologists.
So we're at a stone wall.
We are.
What does the state of Washington do? How is their legislation different from what you're proposing?
Chairman Mona Sanderson, I'd have to look at it specifically.
I think it's important for us to know what the state of Washington does, state of California. And the regional approach before we go any further with this. This is
Chairman Mona Sanderson, I will bring that to the committee by tomorrow, and we certainly are happy to work with the speech language pathologist to try to work out language.
But if there is definitely a major difference between including swallowing and not including swallowing, we have to deal with that. And it's extremely difficult for legislators. I mean, yes, I'm professionally trained, and yes, actually, I have worked with occupational therapists and speech pathologists and speech therapists in my public health work. So I think it's very difficult to put us into the position to decide, and it would be much better to have the board take care of this rather than legislators. But since we are in the times that we are, and we need to have more information from the surrounding states and other states too, to see how this compares with what other states do. So if you can bring that information, give it to the administrator, and then she, in collaboration with me, will go over it, and then I'll be talking with the committee to figure out where we want to go from here.
I'll be happy to.
Okay.
And I would hope, Madam Chair, that as that discussion goes forward among the professions, the professionals, that somewhere in the conversation you're asking the question, what's the best public policy that will best serve the public as we go forward, taking as much of the turf stuff, if you will, out of it as possible. What is the policy that's going to best serve the public, and also leave us with the highest possible standards? I mean, if this is the model, the national model and the national standard, why would we want to do something less than a national standard or a national model? I would want to know the answer to that question. If that makes sense.
And to follow up with that, access to care is so important. And sometimes we were able to get an occupational therapist when we couldn't get a physical therapist. And so we need to look at, as Senator Gordley says, what is in the best interest of the patient.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Tracy Retton.
Oh, you want to sit in the middle?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tracy Retton, and I thank you for allowing the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. The Oregon Physical Therapy Association opposes Senate Bill 135 in its current form, not for the same reasons that you just heard. However, we too had seen the model language that was initially proposed. The occupational therapist did submit that language to us to review, I believe also in the late summer months. When the bill came out of legislative council, from what I understand, it looked quite a bit different. Essentially, what we heard was that instead of putting the specificity of that language in, they made it much more broad and then allowed rulemaking authority for the board to later define the scope of practice. Senate Bill 135 would, again, allow for a very broad definition of the terms occupational therapy and the practice of occupational therapy. But the bill would also then allow for the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board to later define that scope of practice through rulemaking. We believe that scope of practice of any healthcare profession is most appropriately determined through statute in order to ensure both ample dialogue and adequate consumer protection. For this reason, at this time, we oppose the bill in its current form and would prefer the more specific language, as I think it eliminates confusion and make sure that everybody understands what is going on with their scope and how that might impact other scopes of practice. Thank you for your time, and I'll take any questions that you might have.
I am introducing a bill, and I'd like to have your feedback on this, where the board would determine scope of practice, but the way the Board of Medical Examiners would actually appoint someone, the board would appoint someone, and then that's for it, and then the association would appoint someone that would be for it, and the board would appoint someone that was against it, and the association would appoint someone against it, and then we'd have a neutral party. And then what that subcommittee would do is work out this, what you're asking us to do, work that out, and then they would make a recommendation to the legislature. And I know it's my bill, but I think it's important for all of these scopes of practices bills to be really well vetted and determine what is in the best interest of the patient. And I would like your just feedback on that type of a proposal.
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I know that you had mentioned that concept to us previously, and it happens tomorrow night is our legislative committee meeting. We've initially indicated that concept to them. And they're very eager to discuss that. I know that we've also dealt with our own scope of practice issues, and they can be difficult ones, and I definitely would not want to be in your seats trying to decide which is the most appropriate and which is going to protect the public the most, because I realized through this, and I'm fairly new to this whole process, that the sides can differ quite a bit. We're definitely going to be discussing that concept, and we'll definitely be in communication with you about that.
Yeah, I think it's with the healthcare industry, the fastest growing industry is the healthcare industry, and we need to have more providers. I mean, there's a shortage, and so as we expand, we have to be extremely careful that the care that the providers are given are going to be safe and of high quality. But we also don't want turf issues saying, I want to do this so you can't because billing comes in and I want to get the money here and not, you know, I want to have that opportunity and not any. That's where we have to get that out of the debate, and hopefully that will hopefully we'll come up with some legislation that helps us. But that doesn't solve it right now. And I think that any further questions regarding for them.
Madam Chair, I just hope that you will progress your bill in such a way that we can bring some solutions this session rather than to, even if it means that you have something to be done during the interim, but I don't think that we should hold this profession up for another session, especially if we can get something done this session and they can set the record straight. There's nothing I hate more than scope of practice bills, but they are a reality of life. And when something is a reality of life and all these young people that are in school and paying their money to go into this profession, I think we owe it to them to bring some kind of settling to this profession and to this issue. So I'm hoping that it's going to be done within the framework of this session.
And just for the committee, I've just sent it back this week for the third draft on the bill dealing with scope of practice. So it's not in bill form yet, but I would hope everyone will give input on that once that comes forward. I would think some lobbyists will not want it, but then I've had some lobbyists tell me they do want it, so we'll see. All right. Any other questions? I think that direction has been given to the people who have testified that we need some amendments to be shared with Shannon. If there's no further comments, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 135. Okay. Committee, on March 2nd, Friday, we're going to Burns. The National Guard is going to fly us there.
We are going to Burns.
We have been talking with Judge, and I can't, who,
the better one there.
Oh, I can't, the, Judge, he's here in the Capitol a lot, and we're going to have it at the high school, and there's a very good day proposed for us, and I would like you to please let committee staff know if you're not able to go, because I want a quorum. We had a quorum at Mount Hood, and I definitely want a quorum in Burns.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
How are you going to get the president there?
We have yet to talk with him about that.
That's cool.
All right. Is there any further business? If there's no further business, the meeting's adjourned.